Today's Mishnah in Masechet Pe'ah, brought to you from Yerushalayim Irat Kodesh, is Perakei Mishnah Dalet. Now we need to define who exactly is the Ani that the Torah is referring to. What defines that status of an Ani? So we're going to see that if a person does not have what it is that he needs in order to live for a year, then, which is 200 zuz. So if you can get along on 200 zuz for the year, kol hakavod. But anyway, if you don't have 200 zuz in your bank account, you are considered to be an ani. And at that point, you are given access to leket, shikha, peya, meiser ani, and you're not chayv to take off trumas and meisers from it, and so on and so forth. So those are our special welfare considerations here. Now, what about if you have that kind of bank account, but you are in Rome and you lost your credit card? Well, there ain't much to do because you don't have leket, shikha, and peya in Rome. But what if you are in the Shomron and you lost your credit card? What's the din then? There's no way for you to access your cash. You're on the road. You have nothing to eat. Are you an ani? Are you a temporary ani who maybe we have dinim in our welfare system to allow the temporary support, which will then be repaid and will go after your bank account to make sure it goes back to the real aniyim, or do you just suffer and find yourself alone or go out and beg? Well, that's what our Mishnah is about. Baal HaBayit, we use the word Baal HaBayit as in contrast to an ani usually. So this man he's a householder, so he's got 200 zuz to his name. And he was going from one town to another. It was over mi makom le makom, and he lost his credit card. Now, he is hungry. V'tzarich litoleke, shikha, peya, maserani. He is allowed to. Yito. But according to Rebbe Eliezer, v'chyachzor leveto yishalem, divin Rebbe Eliezer. So that means that according to Rebbe Eliezer, we have a concept of temporary usage of leke, shikha, peya. But he has to repay this. And the Yerushalmi says he has to repay it to where? To like a Bezdin? Bezdin Agoda? Where does he repay it to? So the Yerushalmi says he repays it to the Aniyim in the place where he took it. And because according to Rebbe Eliezer, you can actually, that's a mashma'ut, you can actually be sued by those Aniyim that you deprived of this additional food, and they can take you to court. And it's recoverable in court. And what is special is that we're going to be getting to that in Chulin itself a bit later, but there's a long way to go in Chulin. So just another 40 daf, and we're right there in the middle of this sugi here in Peah. But anyway, so this is Rebbe Eliezer's shita. V'chachamim omrim, why in the world would he have to repay it? Either he is an ani or he's not an ani. But where do we get the idea that there is a semi-ani who's allowed to borrow from the matonos la'aniyim? Either he is or he's not. So the chachamim omrim, ani haya ba'ota sha'ah. At the time that he needed that food and he did not have access to his bank account, he is, for all intents and purposes, an ani. So what good does it do him to have that money back at home? What would be the din if someone lived for years on leket, shikha, peya, and 1 week he gets the lottery? He wins the lottery. So does he use the money from the lottery to pay the money back that he's been living on from the aniyim? Absolutely not. There's no chiyuv to pay the money back if an ani becomes an usher. So why does he... Why does this guy, Alon, so why does this guy have to pay the money back? He was a real ani who then became an usher. Seems to be exactly the same thing. And if not, where would it be the mucker to be able to use this? Wow. So, I mean, essentially the truth is that this little question is apparently the reason that we even have this Mishnah here, because at the end of the eighth parak, there we're going to have all of the dinim of who has a right. So like this idea of having 200 zuz. I mean, we don't learn about that until the eighth parak. So why is this Mishnah here? L'chora, the Mishnah is only here because it's a continuation of the sugya that we just had about when you have to pay back the ani for what you took from him. And that was the previous Mishnah we discussed, the fact that you'll need to exchange it for the ani and the machlokas Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim about that issue. So l'chora, that's why we bring this Mishnah here. But otherwise, one would think it belongs in the parak that discusses rights to the matanot. Okay, moving on. Perek Hey, Mishnah Hey. This is based on a very important halacha, which incidentally is a halacha that only appears in Maseches Chulin. but we've got a long way to go till we get to it. But we're going to see that the Gemara learns out in Chulin that the word le'ani can also be darshaned, not only le'anita azov, but that this mitzvah is given le'ani, which means that if the ani has a field, he cannot be zocha to the lekacher kampeya in that field. He has to give it away, and the Mishnah, the mitzvah is also on the ani himself. So that creates a problem, because the truth is, in the event that a person is an ani, he's not going to be able to be zoche to the lekacher kampeya, and the problem is created where we have a question about whether he is considered to be the owner. So whatever would give him a schus of ownership would also prevent him from being able to be zoche to the lekacher kampeya in the field. And that, actually, you could see immediately, is going to have massive implications in what the exact arrangement would mean when someone is given rights. So there are rights that we're going to discuss in this Mishnah, but first let's just point out the opening salvo here is that the things that are grown by the owner, they remain usur for the ani, and that means that he can't be zocha in them, and the halacha about being putter from trumas and maestras, if this is in fact matana islaniyim and chikha upeya and so on, then when a ani who does have a right to them takes it, he does not have to take off like a chikhulbeya or maisarani. What happens if he gives it to someone else? So this is our introduction, because we're going to be talking about exchanges between two poor people in which each poor person who can't take it himself gives it to another poor person who can't take it himself from his field, and now we switch. So we need to first explain what the din is on the matanas. Are they permanently putter from trumas and maaseros, and that's defined by what they are? Or is it the ownership of the ani that makes them putter? So the Mishnah first asserts it has nothing to do with the ownership. It has to do with their status of being the matanes la'aniyim. Once they were so defined, they are never going to be chayev themselves in trumas and maaseros, and therefore hamachalif im ha'aniyim. If somebody exchanges his own stuff, maybe he's got stuff that's higher quality and he wants to be mezakeh the ani, or maybe just the opposite, he wants to have the better quality, which turned out to be here the ani had, he exchanges his own stuff with the ani stuff. So whatever the reason is, bishalo, whatever he got out of the deal, remains putter from Trumas and Maaseres, because even though now it's owned by the rich man, it is a matana la'aniyim. And if afterwards the ani wants to give that to a rich man for whatever reason, as an exchange or as a gift, it remains putter. And therefore, bishalo is putter. What is actually his now, and it's no longer owned by the ani, makes no difference. It remains putter. But bishal aniyim chayav. Now, the question is, what does the word bishel, that's a very strange word, bishel aniyim. And because of that word, now you need to know that not all of the girsaot in the Mishnayos have the word bishel. And some just say shel aniyim. So if it just says shel aniyim, so then it's very clear. Whatever was given to the ani, if it wasn't originally the leket shekopeah, but it was given as an exchanger in lieu of the leket shekopeah, it is going to be chayev anyway. And the ani would have to take off trumas and maaseres. But if you say bishel, it means that the person who gave it to the ani, he is responsible on the part of the aniyim that he gave, and he's going to have to take off trumas and maaseres, which is a very strange halacha, because whatever the ani agreed to, he agreed to. I mean, this is nothing. Why is it his responsibility? That is very strange. And in fact, as the Tosfos Yontif brings over here, the correct gears, it would be shel aniyim, and it's not a chiyuv. How would it be a chiyuv on you? I mean, if the ani agreed, he agreed. Okay, very good. But we've got the two possibilities. Now, here's where it gets interesting. You've got two people, both of whom are poor, and they agreed to become sharecroppers on this field. So now, each of them would not be allowed to take the matanais, because sharecropping gives you an actual value in the field. That's how the way that the sharecropping agreement was arranged. So when you make up a den, remember sharecropping is that you've got a 25% interest, at 33%, it's l'shlish, l'revia, l'mechza, you get that amount of the field. It's not viewed as a right to the harvest. It's viewed as a right to the field. And whatever it is that the field is going to produce, along those eyes of yours are getting tired, but they need a little bit of cold water on them. And whatever it is that the field produces, you're getting because you're an owner in the field. But that also locks you out of the right to take off trumas and maaseres. Now, in this case, there were two poor people, both of whom were sharecroppers, let's say, at a 25% sharecropping rate. And now one can give his trumas and maaseres, I mean, his matanis laniyim, to the other poor sharecropper, and that poor sharecropper can give his to the other one. And even though it looks like an exchange, there's no iser in doing that. And shnayim shekiblu et asadeba arisut, zenotein lezeh chalko maaser ani, vezenotein lezeh chalko maaser ani, and we do not have a problem of that exchange at all. Now, the question is, how does that work? I mean, is there like, how do you define which are his and which are the other guys? This is a big machlokus among the Achronim, and the Tiferes Yisrael actually claims that the Mishnah is talking about that they were given specific areas that were theirs, which is very difficult to believe. And Lamaisa, the Pashtus of the Sugya is not like that, and the the beautiful Pirush of Rav Kanievsky, learns that it's not like that, and that wherever that chelik is, what they give, they can say, this is from the part that's my chelik. Okay, but that's a side question as the interrelationship of what part of a field is yours. Now, on the other hand, how about if you are a contractor and you do harvesting, and somebody contracts you to do the harvesting, and you are going to be paid by a certain percentage of the harvest. Now, even though that sounds very much like the idea of sharecropping, it is very different, because you, in such a case, are being given a chelek of the harvest that you harvest after it's harvested. You do not have a share in the field. You're not taking any risks like a sharecropper takes, in which, depending on the yield of the field, that's what it is going to get. And that has nothing to do with an ownership in the field. So if you were mekabel besoda for ketzira, nonetheless, strangely enough, it says that you are aser beleket shechol peah umayser ani. You're still going to be considered to be like an owner, and you're not going to be able to take, because we look at you, even though we're only a contractor, we look at you as being usher, and we consider the contractual agreement about a contractor to giving you an actual right in the field. Says Rabbi Yehuda, now wait a minute. I mean, that doesn't make any sense. Why is that? And remember, whenever Rabbi Yehuda says, Eimatai or Bamedvar Mamurim, he's being mefarish the Tana. That was the Tanakhama before. He's not coming to be chaylik. So Rabbi Yehuda wants to explain the logic in this, because, I mean, if you contracted, how does that give you a right to the field? So he was referring, says Rabbi Yehuda, only to a specific type of contract. When do we say that he's considered to be the equivalent of an owner and he's not able to take leket shikha upeya? Is dafka if he was given a chelek in which he's told, okay, you're going to get a shlish, a mechza, a ravia, in which case this wording of the contract sounds like the same as a sharecropper contract. And when you use those words, it implies that you actually do have a real interest in the soda itself. And if you have such a real interest, then the question would be, can you take the leket shikha upeya? Now, the question also revolves around, between the lines, another issue, which is, we said before that we had this, like, way before, in the third parak, we were talking about the issue about the idea of peya, because peya is taken from the end of the field, right? So who is the chiyav of the peya on? If you just own what is now currently the field that as it is, are you the one that's chiyav to peya? Because, I mean, over here, it's putting lekachik and peya together in the ownership of a field which only came after it was already grown and you were only engaged as a contractor. So it does have something to do with that shaila before. There's a lot of discussion how we could square this with the shita before that says that you'd only be chayav in peya if you were also the owner of the field when it was growing. So in any event, in such a case, you would also have the din Imotai, Zmanjaki Bilbimenu, Lemerza, Bishlish, Ulrevia. But if he said to him in this language, you can take a third of what comes out of this Ktsira as your payment for the work of harvesting. So then, for sure, he is simply being paid out of the cuts here. And in that case, for sure, he would be allowed, because he's not an owner, he would be allowed to take leka chikampeya, but he would still be usher in the meiser ha'ani, however. And because remember, meiser ani itself is something that only becomes chayev afterwards. And that is, you give away, and he is the owner because he was told that he gets to keep that percentage of the actual harvest. And that's when you're chayev to give it as meiser ani. So it's his chayev of meiser ani. And therefore, despite the fact that he is an ani, gives him no rights to it. Now, the problem is that this appears to be an actual stira in Rabbi Yehuda, because over here, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that apparently that somebody who doesn't own it until it's actually harvested, and in that case, he can take the shikha, and that means that, I mean, we had before Rabbi Yehuda saying that the opposite is true. Remember, we had before in the fourth perek, we had the case where he was a goy, and then he became a ger, and he was a ger at the time of the ketzira, and we said over there that you're chayev shikha because the shikha becomes chal at the time that you're moving the material to the kri, to the place where you're going to be storing it, and that's when the shikha is chal, and at that point he was Jewish, but if that's true, that's after the ketzira, and so then why in this case is he allowed to take the shikha? The shikha was chal at the time of the ketzira. So it seems to be a big stira in Rabbi Yehuda. Gosh. So there's a lot of discussion about that. And it's interesting that the Rush explains that the reason that it's not a stira is that you need both. You need to actually be the owner of the field, but you also need to be chayev in the shikha. You need the chiyuv of the shikha is indeed defined by the time in which you do the ketzira. And at that point, this person was a ger because he had already been mitgayer. So you'll say, yes, but he wasn't the owner of the field. In this case, it's not true. He wasn't Jewish, but he was the owner of the field, right? So that means there's two completely different issues. Who is the owner? At what point do we define that? That's the growth. At what point is he chayev for being the owner? That's defined by the time of the ketzira. In which case, Rabbi Yehuda could say both things. And in fact, in this case, it's no steer at all, which is very, very cute. Okay, gentlemen, we finally got ourselves this Mishnah, and we can look forward to exciting days to come. Wishing you all b'sorot tovot and happy, calm days, with everybody else taking care of our enemies and we flooding Ben Gurion Airport to chas v'shalom, not to leave, but to be makabel panim of all of the thousands that are coming back, the Krat Elul, including Richie, but he's not here. Take care.